What's up, everybody? We are back with season 3 of Welcome to the Future podcast. This episode is really special because, of course, as you'll see, some familiar faces. Of course, to my right, I have our president, Mr. Ben Arnett.
Yo, Ben.
To my left, I have Mr. Jeremy Eunice. He's also on our horticulture team. He's a genius grower, genius in everything that he does in cultivation.
Let's be careful with that.
No. Right. Is that
damn. Damn. Wah.
You're right.
Wah.
Right.
Damn, Mike.
You also recognize that noise from episode 1 of season 1. Yeah. But last and certainly not least, we have this familiar face from season 1. He may be episode 2 or 3, entitled Grown with Mr. So. We have none other than Mr. Rick Campanella. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Nice to see you again, Leo, you well. And everyone else here.
Absolutely.
Made the trip from Denver, yep. And very smooth. Stayed at the hotel, rested up some yesterday, and played guitar in my room and stuff. Nice. Brought that in this morning and got everybody kind of warmed up before the show. So hopefully that had the effect that I had intended.
For sure. You guys will see some of that content. It'll be featured in this episode, and we'll try to see if we can get like a 3-minute piece out, you know, Mr. Soul ripping a couple of shreds here in the podcast studio.
If I get 2.5, I'm happy.
Okay, perfect. We can do 3. We can make that happen. But other than that, man, how was the weather in Denver versus coming here right now in January?
Well, you know, it's crisp here for the
crisp
moment,
the
right?
I
would describe the weather here in Vegas as crisp.
That's the perfect
dollar bill.
I've ever said
crisp is a dollar bill, and just as cold.
Right.
So for Vegas, it's like what, 50 degrees, 55. But I came from 30 or 29 or somewhere around there, you know, not to be too precise, but that you can feel the difference. And so happily, I'm basking in the 55 degree Vegas weather at the moment.
Right. How are things on site at the facility with Laura, Mark, the rest of the Brothers Grimseat team?
I've got a team now that is just like a well-oiled machine, and everybody's family, and it's a great scene. You know, I never thought in my life, you know, man, would I ever reach a point where I have a, you know, spot in the world where I have my life and my business all kind of like working together. And the one thing that I would say outside of being phenomenally happy to be married to an incredible, you know, a capable and intelligent woman who really gets me and vice versa. And we have a daughter 7 years old. And so all of that, you know, joy of family life is something that at my age, 60 something, starting my 60s a couple of years ago, I would never have maybe said as a younger man that time in my life would be the great time to start, like, you know, having a family again. Yeah. But I did kind of miss from like 4 years on age for my children growing up, because my wife at that time did decide to divorce. And so I ended up watching my kids grow up a little bit from the outside looking in. So not to belabor the point too much, but that's a huge, you know, soul enriching experience that one might say, well, you know, you reached a level of success in your life, man. You know, maybe you could afford to just live with bikini models and go on vacations and things like that. And be like, that's not the kind of guy that I am. I'm not wired that way. And I don't think philosophically that's really the right way to like conduct one's life. Or would you really feel that good on your deathbed looking back like, yeah, I lived so hedonistically for that last 20 years. Man, that was a freaking sleigh ride.
Deathbed, right?
That was a sleigh ride.
That's an empty deathbed. When you choose the friends and family, you're surrounded by a room of loved ones. And that's I think that's the goal, like you said. That's a special time because you only get little kids for so long. And when you get those little precious moments, because I got a 4-year-old and like coming home and turning your phone off, like being able to turn off business, and like when they curl up and crawl on you, it's like game over. Anyone can be a rich man in the world as long as you have a loving family.
Yeah, right, that's for sure. These are the things that are the richness of a life, you know.
True wealth.
I look at that like, wow, you know, what a great opportunity for me to have fallen into like a family life for myself there on my little farm, and you know, running my business. And so that's all cheery and lovely. And you know, the guitar thing was something that I had an ex-wife who had asked me, you know, to stop playing guitar at one time or whatever. And I was pretty into photography at the time. And she mentioned like, and I just focus on the photography. That's pretty funny. I didn't even think of that. But so no pun intended. I did take 10 years off of the guitar, and then I picked it up again about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I've been taking lessons and working at it, and it's coming back now. And so that's like another soul enriching, something that's an endeavor that people don't usually try to pick up later in life. But I have stopped and stalled so many times on my little guitar journey all my life that I felt like, well, right now is the time, like, profit from the peace and tranquility right. and control over your time and your life that you've been able to carve out now, and use that to like make that little dream that was in the back of your mind finally just like come true. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's about. I'm feeling super good about all of that. And then, you know, the community, the cannabis community, knowing you guys, working with you guys, and the products that you've shared with me, and the knowledge that I've gained that we've just been talking about for like the first half an hour before right. the show.
let's try to transition to
that. Yeah, my personal life is fantastic.
But before we transition, I want to ask the question of, one, I obviously feel like, you know, where you are as a person mentally, emotionally, and spiritually always impacts your profession, right? How did that impact your passion for cannabis, even in this partnership, willing to make the change? Because last time you were here, you know, we were discussing some methods, and, you know, I know you were chatting a lot with Mike on, you know, getting our fixtures and really, really getting your space dialed in to really see the results that you needed. How did having that perfect family unit, the perfect staff, really inspire you to go even harder in cannabis?
Oh, that, well, it just leaves me to focus on what I do and really trust and enjoy watching the others that I can delegate things yeah. to, you know, rise to the occasion or show me, you know, I think there was a thing, a Schwarzenegger thing recently, like, show me your leadership capabilities, you know, like it's like,
it's important.
Find those
important.
Guys. Yeah. And so I'm watching all that unfold in front of me. And it, like I say, it allows me finally to have not the whole world on my shoulder and being a one-man band trying to support the whole thing and allowing, you know, oh, good, I can delegate that to this person. Right. And that's why I mentioned earlier, now, Laura's so capable, intelligent woman that I can turn my back and just say, oh, she knows business. She's been a partner in businesses before. She appreciates what I do and understands what I do. And she interfaces with the public, perhaps easily argued that she interfaces with the public much better than Mr. Soul does. So it's great to have people like that, that I can say, I've actually got things in better hands than my own in some cases. And I can really look at, you know, the nuts and bolts, if you will, of, you know, what I do, get out there and be with the plants, be with the equipment that keeps them alive and thriving. And so I guess I'd love to talk to you right. about your lights and how that's, I've had kind of very little feedback, because I'm the kind of person that likes to compile my data, look at how things are going and live with it for a while and then say, okay, now I've reached my conclusion. Here's what I've noticed over all this time. Instead of being sporadically like reporting little bits and pieces of that, sometimes when people bring me data like that, it's not as helpful as if they had taken the time to say, hey, there's an entire study we just did and we went through it soup to nuts and here's what the results really are. You know, let's sit down. You can digest this and understand what our experience was. And I'd love to be able to say, that's how I handled this for you. Right. And here's what I found out, you know, essentially, can I
how has it been? I mean, switching to folks. I mean, comparative to where you were prior to when you were here almost a year ago today with a few weeks, obviously, give or take. What has it been like?
Well, it's been an experience where I realized like, many of the concepts or assumptions, I should say, that I had about lights and the plants and their response to the lights, what's possible with artificial light versus the sun, indoor growing. You know, this is all something that after 30 years of growing, you think like, well, I understand that, you know, you hang the light and this is what it does. You want a brighter one, you get one with greater watts or whatever, you know, and you have to live with, and this is the previous mindset, was that you had to live with the heat that was produced by these lights. You needed as many as you needed to be as bright as you needed for the plants. That's the primary concern. Secondary is like, well, if it's going to get hot, you better deal with that. You know, get some air conditioners, do what you need to do. But now what I'm finding is like, all the air conditioning systems in the rooms that I previously had set up with HID, you know, high pressure sodium in this case specifically, those rooms had air conditioners that were able to more or less keep them at 80 degrees on, you know, most days with a lot of problems of keeping them cool on super hot days. And now I have with the Foz lights in the hottest day of the summer an ability to keep the room in the low 70s if I want to with the air conditioning. It's like no problem. So heat output per wattage delivered to the plants or lumens delivered to the plants is so much lower, you know, that the systems that you use to keep the environment right for your plants, they're so much easier to control with the lights, you know, and that's already an advantage. And, you know, it goes so much deeper than that when you look at the effect that the lights have on the plants, the efficiency of their brightness on the amount of space that they'll cover. For example, on mine, which are the A3Is, I have two A3Is in each of my flowering rooms, you know, set up end to end to cover an area of about, let's say, 8 by 15, something like that. 10 by 15, I think it is 10 by 15. And the first thing I noticed was that my old assumption about indoor lighting, which was you can't make them bright enough to where the plant thinks it's too bright. They always can handle more. And the lights from Foz taught me that that's not true, that, you know, you can actually have the light too close. It's intense enough. And that, of course, as a good LED owner, I had to go out and buy a light meter, which in what, 30 years of growing, I never even owned a light meter. So I'm just going by the seat of my pants, or, you know, the effect that I can see with my eyes as a judgment of the intensity of the light. So I'm seeing effects on the plants where they look like, wow, you know, they're acting like the light's too close. For example, the tips of plants would start turning bleached white and things like that. And I was like, wonder what's causing that. It must be the lights are too bright. That seems odd. You know, in my experience, that wasn't ever possible. So, all right, I accept reality. You know, as a scientist, I'm going to have to say, well, the data shows they're saying that the lights are too close. So I'd move them further away. And as I'm speaking with Mike, who's the rep here, one of the advisors to the company, and he's been a personal representative of the company to me. And in our conversations, he's taught me that not only the intensity is going to be greater than the plants can handle if you're not careful with the way that you meter that, no pun intended, but with the meter, I actually read the difference in the rooms from the LEDs that you have versus my standard lighting and with HPS, and it was a factor of 3 times greater light with you at the same distance from the light. And that told me immediately, well, no wonder, you know, this is, it's deceptive, because your eyes, I mean, it does look super bright, and even it does look brighter than the HPS, but you don't realize it's 3 times brighter. But light's one of those things where I think it's inverse square law, right? The distance that you go away from the light, it drops by the inverse square of the distance that you're changing it by. So
yeah, that was kind of what we discussed earlier, is everyone, this stuff that we ran into big issues when we had our cultivation, why we made the A3Is, most of our units, you know, a little more powerful than people are traditionally used to. And one that's lowering lights. Whenever you lower lights, you're uniformity of that to the canopy diminishes dramatically, and then you have hot spots and low spots and peaks and valleys of your light level, so you're losing yields right there, right? And you're having inconsistency in quality of your product. So like you said, right away, our whole idea was hang them as high as you can, and then just use the, you know, the easy touch screen to go up and down and control your desired PPFD or light levels via
these
that way, and then manage the
terms,
and then take advantage of the uniformity, because I mean there's a lot of stuff that goes, and then obviously the spectrum to get through the canopy, different stages of plant growth, there's a lot of good stuff that comes with it.
Yeah, that penetration, as you mentioned there in the expression through the canopy, right? The light penetrating all the different spectrums, the 3 different choices that you have on the light, you know, have a different effect on that, and one or the other is going to be the more appropriate for any stage of the development of the plant. And that's something to learn, and it's great to see technology in the lighting where we've actually reached a point where you all are producing enough intensity to the plant that then the spectrum starts to become extremely important and be adjusted during different times in the cycle of the plant. Which, you know, again, one of the other things I want to compliment the company on is the fact that you make that choice for the customer so idiot-proof, if you will. You're taking 3 settings. Any one of the 3 would grow your plants from start to finish successfully. It's just that it's better if they're used at the right time in the plant's growth, that the right spectrum is applied at that time. So those choices are there. It's for the customer to, you know, recognize that, work with their own situation, their own room and their plants and what they prefer, and find the right timing for all of those things. But the thing that I'm taking forever to reach, my real point was that the early versions of LEDs didn't give you a reliable setting at which you could run and grow plants well. You had to kind of learn how to tune them and get the spectrum right. And, you know, you really have to be a scientist, an engineer or something to really understand that sort of thing on the level that it needs to be understood to do that effectively. And I think early manufacturers were mistaken to give the buyer, the user of the LED, that much flexibility, because it's like, when it comes to light spectrums, most people, if you could make the analogy to sound, and they're like tone deaf. They can't tell. We don't know what spectrum's coming out. Our eyes aren't made for that, right? Sure. Like, so it's like having a blind painter, you know, trying to paint an elephant or something. It's ridiculous. So they made the mistake of giving all that flexibility to the user. And then 90 times out of 100, you know, the guy has it on the wrong setting and the plants look ugly and they're weird. And there's a commonality to the weirdness I was seeing as I'd go around to these professional growing operations that had the earlier versions of LEDs where they had that issue. And that was one of the things that made me unconvinced that that was the direction to go. But I can't say enough about how easy it was when I got the FOES lighting up and just, you know, plug and play. I learned a little bit along the early months of, hey, you know, lights can be too bright. Oh, well, who would have thunk it, you know?
Right.
And so I deal with it. But if I can talk about some of the specific results that are more pertinent, more relevant to my own business, which is breeding for seeds, when I put the plants in those rooms, I'm seeing that with the lower temperatures, I'm able to maintain a happier environment for the plants. And when you're trying to pollinate a bunch of female flowers and there's pollen flowing around in the room, humidity issues can be a problem, which they're much easier controlled when you don't have a light that's causing issues, and you can control your environment that much better. And then on the plants themselves, when the plants are growing and they're getting the right spectrum at each of those stages, I'm finding that, wow, lo and behold, where a plant might have X number of seeds, and when we do a final quality control on the seeds, we have to reject 30% of the seeds. So we really got 70% of the yield that we counted originally. And we have machines that actually go through and sort the machines and pull out the good ones and the bad ones and separate them into bins. When we have started using these lights, we're finding that it's a much lower percentage, like 10% or 15% at most, versus like 30% bad seeds in the previous lighting system. So evidently, the seeds are maturing more fully, more uniformly throughout the plant, and may have something to do with the penetration you were mentioning before. When you have the right spectrum, it's going through the canopy and giving the plant what it needs. So we're seeing that. I'm also seeing, you know, it's not important to making seeds, but when you see the plants are really resinous and the resin glands are just standing out, and the leaves are in what people call praying position. You know, they're rejoicing to the light. You know, and you see that every day. And stretch is under control. I feel that the period of time that we use the spring and summer spectrums before going to autumn has been largely responsible for that. And we've also seen the yields on the plants when we do grow a room just for flower. We had one clone that we were growing. It was a Romulan, and it's the old, you know, the old Romulan, the classic. And it never got the size of cola that it got when it went under the FOES lighting. I thought, my Lord, this thing is like the size of that mason jar in diameter. Whereas before it was more like, you know, this bong there. And I'm like, holy Christ.
A little skinny.
So, you know, it fires on all cylinders. I'm super happy to be converting to them. And we just have to discuss, how do I get rid of the last room that has HPS, and let's get some FOES in there. Because I'm ready to rock and roll with these things for now on.
Now, how have you, obviously, I know you probably have buddies that still use HPS and they are looking at the results that you have. How do you translate that conversation to that from the transition all the way to the benefits, what's that conversation like between the two of you? Because I know it's very different
right?
these days.
Well, it depends on what that friend is trying to do, obviously. Yeah, of course, if it's somebody in the business and he's wanting to put together some sort of commercial operation, then, you know, there'd be one answer and then there'd be another answer if the guy's in his mother's basement and he just wants to grow his own, you know, which many of our clients, you know, they're small one-pack buyer on the website or something like that. And more power to these people. The whole country is lighting up with people who are realizing that, you know, hey, I could grow these plants in my home and not go to the dispensary, or, you know, go to the dispensary only to see what's new and what seeds I might buy in my, you know, put in my next grow, which I think
it's somewhere.
Right.
It's a cool, that's how we all got here.
Right. It's a cool vibe, you know, when you think about it. And so in those cases, you know, those people have one set of needs, and the commercial guys, I think they would benefit a lot more from the benefits that you get from your lights. But the other thing on the easy on the side of making it easier for those newbie growers, they want to stay away from the lights where it's like infinitely variable. And then that just opens up a whole can of worms that they don't know whether it's their nutrients or their, you know, what is wrong with their plants. And they shouldn't be given allowance to use one of those lights because they don't understand the spectrum well enough. Right. So for those folks, I would say, hey, you guys, make it easy on yourself and get, you know, a light from Foes where you can't go wrong. You set it and forget it, or adjust it as you feel necessary if you even feel qualified. But there's a safe way of getting through this, and you don't have to use the old technology because you'd be wasting a lot of money on extra air conditioning and you know, causing problems with the plants being in a room that's hotter than it ought to be, and all these types of problems that come from that. But then with the spectrum issue already solved by Foes, and you just put it on a setting that's going to work for your plants, those guys are better off that way. That would be my advice to them. And then on the commercial side, it would be more about like, hey, you guys, you know, the resin content and the yield. And, you know, when you have certain area, this is a number of square footage that you plan to get X number of grams of smokable weed or whatever it is that you're going to extract, whatever,
right. Yeah.
Their yields will go up, and their ability to maintain their health of their crops and so on becomes easier, and all these other things, and cost of overhead goes down. Those would be the issues that I'd say to those guys.
What you guys see, that's not something that we have to, we didn't have to fish him to say that or feed it to him. I mean, those are real benefits, which I think is really important, which is
right
why I asked that.
Of my head.
Because sometimes when you ask someone at Foes, of course, it sounds great with us saying it, but hearing someone that was once hesitant, that made the transition and really, you know, dialed in with Mike, shout out to Mike. You don't see him on camera today, but he is in the studio with us. He really got with Mr. Rick and made sure that he was taken care of to get the results that he needed to really highlight the activity of our product. You know, it was very
step
important.
Step by step, you know, he made sure that I understood what I was doing. And, you know, he was also gentle enough with me and my personality and so on to, you know, not be an overbearing, you know, hovering over me.
Right.
He let me make my mistakes and report back, and then he'd advise and so on. And he was very kind through the whole process. So, I mean, you have the support as well as the technology with this company. So my hat's off to you.
Appreciate it.
Now
going into 2023, obviously with you breeding seeds, let's talk about some of the seeds that you have this year. I know of the notables, White Truffles and Gluey, Genius and Rosetta Stone. I know those are the parent strains, but let's talk about some of what you have going on.
Yeah, well, those, as I say, you mentioned those are testers, and what we're doing, my sales team, initially when we had test seeds and people were requesting them, we didn't know necessarily how to handle that. And they put it their little think tank and brainstorming and figured out that, you know, well, here's what the public wants. They want to get free seeds with their order, you know, that, and the testers make a great vehicle for that. So these are seeds that we're going to give you. And we're saying that we haven't done enough testing on them to know what the results are going to be, but treat them as, you know, basic cannabis, right? Mm-hmm. You know, give it about 8 or 9 weeks of flowering and, you know, veg the damn thing. It's not rocket science. You should be able to work your way through that. And then if you like, get back to us and tell us about your results. You know, no arm twisting or anything, because we don't want to make people feel like they have to. And then you get more accurate feedback if you don't, because it's completely voluntary on their part. They're calling you up and saying, hey, here's what we found. This is interesting. So that's the nature of the tester seeds that are on offer. And then what happens is that we discovered through the marketing team that people wanted the option of not having to buy other seeds to get this extra seed, and that they were willing to pay something for them outright. And so we made a low price of $25 and said that if you want to just buy that whole pack, it's $25 while they're still in the tester mode until they become an on-the-menu item eventually, which we hope always will happen. So that combination of things has made these growers that we were talking about earlier, the people who are the home growers, sit up and take notice. And so they're really liking those options. And then specifically on the strains that you were mentioning, you know, in the past, I've always kept a very tight, small gene pool and made the Cinderella and the Apollo lines and the Durban tie and the few things that I'm kind of known for. But in the past few years, let's say 7 years or so that I've been in Colorado, the I wouldn't say pressure, but there's been an availability of other strains that were tested, you know, clone only, something like the Romulan things. But Romulan's the one from way back, but still it's an example of a clone only cultivar that someone is saying to me, hey, why don't you work with this and do a hybrid of it? When I came upon Gluey, that's a great example, because it's basically like a Gorilla Glue, it's not an official Gorilla Glue. It's a hybrid of it that some friend of mine on Facebook said to me he really liked it, and he said, what, wouldn't I try it? And I rarely ever accept people's offerings like that, but I decided, hey, he's a nice guy, and you know, what's the worst that can happen? So I started, and I turned out to be this amazing cultivar. And so I really enjoyed Gluey as a high resin producer, a producer also of terps that are uniquely, GG4 type, you know, that skunky-ish that people still love, you know? And so when I want to inject a little bit of that skunk, you know, I cross things with the Gluey. And we created C99 and Gluey together, which made what we call Grim Glue. And now some of the testers are crossed with Gluey. And there was a room where I had a variety of different females, and I reversed a Gluey and made pollen from it. And then, so that's why we have a bunch of, there's White Truffles, which is a pretty popular strain today. very heavy sort of indica type plant with a deeply dark purple. And then because it's such a dark purple, the white of the frosting, the resin production is out of this world. And so you start seeing all this white on the contrast of the dark leaf under it, and it's just even more pronounced. And so I guess that's where it got its name. And it smokes like a demon. I mean, it's something to smoke at night, puts you down.
You didn't bring any with you, did you?
No. I also found that it's an aphrodisiac, so I don't let a lot of that leave the house. I keep that in our
keep
room.
Keep that in the secret stash. There's one point
we're newlyweds, you know.
There's one point that I didn't want to get away from earlier. I didn't get to forget to ask the guys this, but Ben, obviously being one of the co-founding members and seeing all the hard work that went into, you know, creating such technologically advanced fixtures for people like him, how does it feel to hear stories like that for someone that listened, took the advice, you know, still made their mistakes so they can learn it their way? Because I think it is important for consistent application is for you to learn by trial and error to a degree, as long as it doesn't cost you. But it does help with the long-term maintenance if you've been able to sustain it. How does that feel hearing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Rick, like you said, we didn't pay him to say any of this. He's just, you know, had his experiences over a year. We gave him the equipment, kind of let him do his thing. But like you said, it's not just giving people equipment. We never like to drop off lights and say best of luck, because, I mean, this equipment is more powerful. He said it's 3 times more powerful than previous systems. So it's a combination of technology, customer service, whether it be engineers or horticultural specialists, and a much more partnership approach. And when people are willing to embrace that, we get results like this, where we're seeing increased yields, quality of finished product. And again, it's a whole trial and error process. It's tweaking, right? It's not just lights and feeding and everything. It's what genetic are you running? So And I know he was touching on it before, is it's not just replacing one piece and leaving all your other components the same. I always have like my hot rod analogy. Like, I love hot rods, got a 70 Chevelle. You can't take a 50-year-old car that's got 300 horsepower and with a 350 and drop in 1,000 horsepower supercharged V8.
Yeah.
That 50-year-old transmission, clutch, brakes, axles, rear end, front end, everything's got to change. So you can't increase your light levels 3x and then go, yeah, my feeding and EC can stay the same. I don't need to give these plants anything else. The temperature can stay. It's not, your plants are going to suffer and you're going to be confused and you're going to think it's the lights, but in reality, it's not making micro adjustments to other parts of your climate and conditions to appropriately feed those plants. Because, I mean, like you said, for the longest time, if you have light, they'll take it, which for the most part, they will. It's just you need to increase those other inputs to counteract the increased light. So,
and the beauty of all of that is that, you know, as the person who's using the lights is getting used to them and adjusting things accordingly, it's always in the direction of helping and doing better each time as you learn. There'd be a baseline level of, you know, what your output and what your results would look like if you weren't that schooled, let's say, but even mildly schooled, as you're sort of, I was guided along by Mike with little prods here and there, and things just each time I listened to him, you know, poked things up a little bit more and a little bit more, but they were never bad. It's like, it's cool to learn when each time you're learning something new is always some improvement on what you were already doing, and you don't ever have to deal with the going negative for a while before you can bring it back up, you know, and that's been my experience, which was nice.
How's it for you, Jay? Obviously, with you consulting and obviously walking people through this, the good and the bad, you know, how easy is it for you to implement help and offer solutions when there's people that are willing to accept it?
Well, it's getting easier now after being on the FOS team for a year and a half, but it was unfamiliar territory forever. I mean, all we knew was our HPS and metal halide lights, and we could only push them so far. Now with the LEDs, as the LEDs evolved and the spectrum started to evolve and they became more accurate, man, it's what a big difference. So now, I mean, we're still learning how far we can push it and how far we can push the parameters and the EC and even some of the other inputs, CO2 levels. Just, I mean, it's been a learning experience for me, but a fun one. And I wasn't a believer, you know, in LEDs or even the FOS products for a long time. You couldn't have paid me. You couldn't convince me. I had to see.
That is factual as well, ladies and gentlemen. That is true facts. He was not a fan. And you see him here in the podcast. And he's the man to go to when it comes to what we're talking about right now, because he knows his shit for sure.
Well, thanks. It took me a long time to believe. Yeah. And the guys kept, you know, they convinced me that they were onto something, and it wasn't just through words. It was through showing me over time and time again, bringing me to different cultivations, speaking with the operators, the owners. And then finally, once I believed, I'm like, okay, let me try it myself. And I said, I think the guys are onto something, and everything's only gotten better and better since that. It's been about 4.5 years since that day now. So here we are. It's amazing how things change, and proof's in the pudding, man. Yeah. I mean, literally, that's why at FOS we're willing to do a Pepsi challenge against another fixture and do some of that fun stuff. It's like, hey, we're not against trying anything. So
there's always room for us to learn and improve.
Yeah, if someone's doing something better, we want to know how you did it if we can implement it. I mean, it's kind of like the whole Tesla model, make all your patents open, because I mean, at the end of the day, we're here to make cannabis green, and it's not green if your carbon footprint is 80,000. Households to run one cultivation. So we got to figure out how we drop, you know, make it sustainable again, because it's not very green like that, you know. So how do we implement some sustainability practices to it, you know, creating more in a smaller square footage, more intense lights in smaller rooms. So it's there's a lot of little unique things that we're doing, and increasing the longevity of your equipment. You know, if you're having to buy new equipment that has to get shipped on a tanker that burns 6,000 gallons an hour just to get you replacement dehues, tables, lights, what have you, that's not sustainable. So, and again, how many times you're replacing your Freon or your refrigerant in your HVAC, how many HVAC systems you have to put in, you know, if you can start reducing that and increasing the longevity of your equipment, because you're not running your HVAC at 6,000 RPMs, your dehumidification at 6,000 RPMs, everything gets to run. Like he said, it's so much easier to maintain all your other equipment just by putting in lights. So it's, this isn't just great for your plants. It's great for all your other mechanicals in that room. And it makes them all work a little more copacetically, if you will. So
it's funny you say that, because when we were chatting earlier, we chatted on the topic of understanding LED and dialing in. And a couple of the points that were mentioned were the variables to consider that you just mentioned, how to eliminate room for uncertainty, and then also revisiting your ability to diagnose the problem. And then lastly, how do you implement the new technology, which is where we are now with him, Fos, and Mike, you know? So that's very, that was an on-time little chat earlier.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
Well, I appreciate that. It's nice when things kind of flow logically right from one thing to another, perfect. You know, like a perfect guitar solo or something.
Which you gave us earlier. Again, you'll see some of that. Yeah.
We had some fun.
What's the name
of
the guitars? Yeah. The pink?
Oh, that one is a Squire Stratocaster, and they call
pink
it
Stratocaster.
It's a pink color, yeah. I think anyway. They call it white blonde if you check with them.
Okay,
but awesome. Inexpensive guitar that I picked up locally here while I was hanging around. I had time to kill in the hotel.
They bought that here.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I did it the last time I was here when I came for MJ BizCon, right. And it was so easy, as I turned out, to like, it's kind of a hassle to carry a guitar on a plane.
For sure.
You know,
if it's only praying they don't break it.
But here's the trick. You know, like when you tried to get away with, as I did in the past, having the guitar in its case, it becomes an object that's difficult to deal with. But if you put in a thin electric guitar like that Stratocaster in a gig bag, the guitar is actually protected more than pretty well good. Enough as long as you're the only one handling it, right?
Can I hold that
and
for
you?
You
can
no,
put
no,
it on
no,
top
no.
of how everybody has in the overhead compartments. They usually have their bags in there. Mm-hmm. There's usually about 2 or 3 to 4 inches above
right
them.
The top,
that I can just slide the guitar right on in on top of it all. And then I usually try to get an aisle seat so that I can be sitting there when they open those things. I want to be the first
one to put
a guitar over there.
Please.
So it's easy enough to get around with it if you can kind of cowboy it like that, as I do. So I did bring it and... happily Keen here is a guitarist, and a couple other people were able to pick it up and have some fun. So another thing that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that starting to try to enjoy later in life.
Sure. So to talk about another parallel that we have, obviously, with Fos and Brothers Grimseed, I know you have a home growers podcast. It's called, to make sure I get this right, Brothers Grimseed and Friends, Long Live the Home Grower.
Something
talk about
like
the
that.
Origin of that. obviously, I know the name is going to evolve and change, but what was the initial onset of that and the need for that internally with you guys?
Well, you know, embarrassingly as it may sound for me, I was like, being observed by my team at the house so often that there'd be an exclamation like, oh, we should do a show with you, you know, that you should do a reality show or something like that, because I say a lot of stupid shit, you know. And so they say, you know, it's entertaining as hell, you know, that somebody should be watching you all the time. And so Mark, who's in charge of our marketing, and he's like the webmaster, he's just a multi-talented guy who's doing an amazing job. I get up every day and think like, thank God we have him. It's like we have a race car, like a Formula One or something, that's our website. And we found the like Jackie Stewart or whatever can drive the thing, right?
Yeah.
And so he's the driver. And so Mark had the idea that with all of those kinds of ideas and comments that why don't we do like a podcast at least so that you can talk to people and get out some of your ideas that we keep hearing you say that, you know, geez, more people should hear that or something. And so we had, I guess, one episode so far, and Mark asked me some questions about getting plants from the indoors to the outdoors, because people will be pretty soon doing that, you know, in the next couple of months. And so I gave my advice as to how to germinate, how to bring those little seedlings up to a point where they're sturdy enough to get them outside, when to do that, depending on where you live and the kind of weather that you can expect, and so on and so forth. So that was our first kickoff. And it was a little clumsy, I may say. And when I listen back to it, I go, oh my God, either I was just baked or something, or I was just dwelling on things and made my point after like 3 minutes or something. Okay, thank you, Mr. Obvious.
So Mr. Obvious.
We were kidding, you know, we had a good time. But like I say, looking back on it, I hope as we go forward, you'll see an evolution of the way that the podcast comes off.
Absolutely.
And we've learned a lot. The YouTube we've been doing more of before we just recently did this. So there's like a YouTube Brothers Grimm channel as well, where I do explanations of where our strains come from sometimes and just stories of one thing or another. And so that's on the up swing too, and the podcast is being added to that. It's in the same kind of idea, the same vein of, you know, get me and my personality out there. For sure. And give some advice about the things that, you know, I can give advice on in the world of cannabis growing and breeding and this kind of thing. And how we do what we do is always interesting to people, because they'll say, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to do my thing. How do you do yours?
Right.
And so it can be interesting, right?
So one of our show producers, shout out to Mrs. Hannah Scott here. She wrote down one of the notes, wanted to touch base on the USPS battle. I don't think we got to talk on that the last time. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
I think that, you know, that kind of segues into a discussion of how is the seed business treating you in general? And I would have to say that specifically this point about the USPS, to open that up, the USPS is the service that we use to send our seeds out to our customers who order, you know, packs of seeds on the website and so on and so forth. And so there was a certain period of about 2 to 3 weeks, I guess, where we started to receive some reports like, hey, I didn't get my seeds, which is highly unusual. We always feel that, you know, like once they leave us, we got a tracking number, it's right. going to get to you, yada, yada, yada. So my wife, Laura, looked up what was going on by calling a couple of the post offices that were in the towns that were the people had missed their seeds. And she actually found out that they were holding them because we had been flagged as being, you know, a marijuana or something like that, that was illegal contraband to be sending in the mail. And so they stopped the mail. So when Laura, you know, kind of logically stepped the people there through it and spoke to the inspector and said, look, here's what we're doing. We are sending seeds. They're considered hemp. And we even have the DEA's statement in writing that the seeds are hemp, and hemp is legal to send through the mail. And so there shouldn't be an issue. And he said, okay, I need two things from you. I need that statement from the DEA in writing, and I need a COA, a certificate of analysis, from the seeds that shows me that they don't have THC, so that then the two things are consistent, that, you know, this is the law and you're complying. So she provided those things within days to them, and they immediately got back to her and said, you've been whitelisted now. So what that means is that anything that comes from Brothers Grimm as a package to a customer is off limits for them to touch. It's okay. So we got that okay from them.
That's good.
So the seed business becomes easier for us in that respect, as you can imagine, because you don't want to be in a business where, you know, it's questionable or uncertain whether or not your customer is going to actually get the product. And then you have to keep repeating, you know, a cure for that over and over, perhaps. So having that out of the way makes our life easier. And then having the DEA earlier in the year, last year, they came out with the statement about the fact that seeds are considered hemp, which makes complete sense. I think we even talked about that on the last show, how, you know, hey, this is an object that is, you know, has no THC. You know, it may grow into a plant that produces THC later, but that's only under certain conditions. And if they were met, then maybe that would happen. But you can't define something by what it might be someday. You have to define it by what it is now. And so seeds, they took the logical understanding that, as I just described, you know, this thing as it is right now is a benign piece of plant tissue that really isn't going to cause anybody to get high or anything. So we can't stop it. It is hemp. So that alone makes our business legaler, if you will. Right, you know, it's like, yeah, it was legal before, but, you know, now they've said this, it makes it like in stone. And you can kind of now pivot from that and say, well, if there's that level of acceptability by the government that, you know, seeds are hemp and that's off limits, they don't touch that, you're not in the marijuana business, essentially, and you don't have to be in metric, all these kinds of things, right? And so we're now looking at states that do have metric and making them understand that, hey, you know, in lieu of the way that the DEA has defined this, we think that you need to adjust your rules where if they were blocking, say, mm-hmm. seeds from being imported from another state into their state, which many times metric systems and those types of systems do, you know, it's kind of clear that there's no one that benefits from that when you right. think about why would you stop any new strain from being sent to your state? There could be something really radically beneficial to people that is being blocked from your people receiving right. it. It makes no sense to have such a law, right?
Right.
And then if you look at it the other way, like, you know, what possible good could come from it? Well, you know, maybe a cure for cancer, who knows, you know,
right, yeah.
And what harm could come from seeds coming from another state? Virtually, you can't think of a single thing. You know, maybe the little vial that the seeds are sold in, that could be a choking hazard for a child right. under 3 years yeah, old sure. or something. Like, you know, if you had to really stretch your imagination for right. something to pick on, you know. We're trying to, one by one and through a legal process, we have some advocates and lawyers at a level of like the federal government. We are working with them to try to knock over those little barriers yeah, in states right. where they're still resistant. And that sets people at ease that are in the commercial cannabis business that they can buy our seeds and not violate some rule or something, you know, because some of them care about that.
Now, how do we connect that with the clean seed commitment? Is that where that transition came from?
Well, here's the clean seed commitment is something that, again, you know, here's another layer of improvement in Brothers Grimm Seeds as a business. When we do deal with commercial customers in particular, they're buying, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of yeah. seeds at a time, and they have big growing operations where they're seeing the types of things that, you know, the worst of the worst things that happen in the world of growing cannabis is going to happen to guys that are growing on such huge scales like that, right? So they see things like the viruses that are going around. There's a hops latent virus that all of the grows are like very paranoid about possibly getting, or if they have it, they're trying to eliminate it and these kinds of things. And so when the question comes up of bringing in genetics, when we propose that, like, we could solve that problem because unlike a clone, you know, the seed is much more likely to be a clean starting point for you to make all your new plants from. And in fact, I can show how even if you were to start from a clone versus a seed, if it's a feminized seed, you're going to be at pretty much the same height and growth level after X number of weeks has passed. You may as well start from seeds that are clean and don't even worry about getting possibly a dirty clone and having that extra step, that extra expense involved in your operation. And so they say back to us, yeah, that sounds good. And here's the thing. Can you assure us that your seeds won't have the same viruses we would get from the clones, Richard, which is a perfectly logical position to have. So our clean seed commitment, what we did was we took our seeds and we bring them to a state laboratory in Colorado that tests for the viruses and all those other things. And we get a COA, certificate of analysis, that shows that none of those pathogens are present on the seeds. And then that package of seeds is certified to go to a particular client. And then they're getting something that they can say, look, you know, anybody higher up, you know how it is when you work in a corporation, you know, you're looking like, cover my ass here, you know, I bought these seeds. Now, if anybody higher up tells me like, hey, you goofed, I can say to them, look, I got the certification right on here that says it didn't have that, you know, so I did my due diligence. So that helps them feel better. And I like the education that I got, you know, that I had always suspected that, like, you know, it's highly unlikely that that's going to be transmitted by seeds, but you know, you guys go for it. Let's send them to the lab and have them tested. And sure enough, they come back, you know, it's clean. And so we offer that as a commitment to our customers, and especially a large concern where they're buying tens of thousands of seeds. That specific batch will go to be tested, and that specific batch will be stamped and proved before it goes. So I think that that sets people at ease. You know, it's no longer the wild west of cannabis, you know, the world of, you know, this is my friend here. He works at the local restaurant. If you meet him at the back door, he'll give him this $20 bill. He'll give you a bag. You know, it's really like we're walking into dispensaries and people have sophisticated attitudes about the weed and how it's done. And
science. Blame science.
course. And it's, you know, traditionally sort of a hippie, you know, tree hugging kind of mentality that surrounds the cannabis world, you know, Grateful Dead and Burning Man and God knows what, yeah. You know, so there's yeah. that element. So you deal with people across a huge spectrum from that to like the very businesslike person. And somebody said to me recently, like, what do you think is going to happen with cannabis? Do you think that, you know, it'll be kind of like beer, you know, like where you can buy Budweiser or Miller or something really cheap, you know, that's just like tasteless garbage that, you know, 99% of the people are buying that, you know, and only a few people buy like the really fancy stuff. I said, I think that the nature of the cannabis smoker and the culture is such that it has more of a Epicurean feel or a modality that people always, in my experience since I was a teenager and first saw my first pot deal go down, the quality of the weed is always proportional to the price. And the better it is, the more likely the person is going to want to buy it. I mean, it's not about being, I want a lot of it for a very little amount of money.
Like,
it's
what's like, that? How much?
I don't care if it's like, I only get half as much, but if it's like five times as potent, man, I just need like one hit and I leave the house and I'm good. You know, like, ooh, you know,
The top shelf stuff is always, like, it's almost like the opposite of alcohol where they have, you know, the Budweiser stuff is always everyone's go-to. We'll get that and, you know, maybe a mid-shelf bottle. Yeah. Cannabis. The culture around cannabis, and that's and it rings true whether it's the businessman, the soccer mom, the old person going in for back pain. Everyone wants good weed because the price difference between good weed and shitty weed is 20 bucks.
Yeah.
So I mean,
once you've had the good weed, it's like it you can't really go back unless you have to. Like, you have to be in a bind where you just need something to hold you over.
Yeah, but once to hold you over, man.
To hold you over back, for sure.
The worst one of those I ever had, I was on a vacation.
Had a holdover bag on vacation?
I was on an island. I think it was St. Lucia or something, right? And didn't bring weed on the vacation. I just went by, like, maybe I can buy from somebody on the beach. But, man, this guy brought me back the worst shit. That, like,
stem seed, the brick.
I was, like, rolling a joint, smoked the whole thing to my one, you know, by myself. And it's still just barely high. And
for sure. Oh. That's like, what got me into growing weed, though. You know, cannabis is like, I don't want to keep spending this money. Yeah. How hard is this? Yeah. I go see somebody's grow. And I'm like, oh, teach me how to do that. I can do that.
With that there. It's one thing I thought about too, Ben, the part that he mentioned earlier with like the good clean, the clean seed commitment is like, that's their customer. That's their way as a business and a brand to build some level of confidence when the customers purchase from them, to know that there's a level of transparency that you offer, to know that that's, you've done your research, right?
Yeah, good word for it.
That aligns with what we do. Obviously, if we're talking about our less than 1% failure rates, knowing that the fixtures have been tested, they've been pruned, and they've been, you know, reviewed by experts to ensure that all of our customers are getting the same quality technology, regardless of who you buy from, who's the distributor, it's consistent across the board. And that's really important because I think as a brand, you do have a commitment to deliver, not just the bare minimum of your product, but you have the commitment to supersede what people need. You know, and in that case, you learn that with the light, like, oh, damn, the Fos Light actually can provide more light. Mm-hmm. We kind of superseded the initial idea that you had for the fixture when you first got it.
Dedication to quality control.
Yep. Yeah,
that's what it is.
Sure. Yep. That's important. It's costly too.
Sure. It's not cheap to add all the third party qualifications, licensing, testing in UL, DLC, EU.
Yeah.
You know, the list goes on. You know, to be in GMC certified facilities. And again, though, with all that extra steps put in place, we have less than a 1% failure rate. We have fixtures that don't have blemishes on them. We have, you know, a satisfaction guarantee that we will outgrow, out yield, out, you know, better, higher quality, higher performing plants than our competitor. And we do that not just because we're arrogant or cocky, because, you know, there's so much white noise out there with bad technology, mismarketing, misinformation that, you know, people lie, plants don't.
Yep.
That's kind of a saying we have here. So if we do a test side by side, we 100% want to be involved as much as you'll let us. And, you know, let's do plant sap analysis. Let's look into the plant. It's like blood work for the plant, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff out there available to us that allows us to really almost speak to the plant week by week, day by day, whatever we'd like to. And let's just see what happens. I mean, and if we can provide more light, usable light to the plant, in theory, you know, photon, chemical reaction. There has to be chemical reaction within the plant for every photon absorbed. So we should be able to dial in that plant to, you know, not maybe maximum output, but damn near.
Yeah.
Based on what your system is set up, we'll find the other limiting factors. Light was the limiting factor. It was 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 PPFD with HPS before you started burning your plants. Now that we can go 2-3 times that, the rest of this stuff has to change. So what's now the limiting factor? We'll find it and then we'll fix it. So, but again, along the way, it's creating, you know, the best medicine at the cheapest possible cost you can, and providing the best medicine for the end product user. And that's why we're all here, right? This is after the sexiness of the cannabis space wears off, you realize, you know, you're here and you're hustling, and it's
made
an
a believer
farm.
Out of me. I was very much the old school guy, you know, and this was the first time I came across, I forget exactly how it was presented to me, but somebody said, hey, you really got to try this. These Foz lights are different. And
shout out to whomever that was. We appreciate you. If you find out the name, we'll make sure we'll send you some Foz swag and a good
been,
little.
You know, one of the other things I was saying to Ben, when I was at MJ BizCon, I saw your booth and the way everything was very professional and impressive, in the sense that, you know, you don't have to have a light meter in your hand necessarily to tell when you do comparison as you're walking around and you're seeing other people selling LEDs, and then you go to the Foz thing and you go like, I wouldn't want to be competing with these guys. You know, this shit blows everybody away. Yeah. It's like obvious to the casual observer as you're walking through the event. So that's impressive. And it's great to be able to cross that threshold and say that, hey, you know, I can put the old lights away and do away with all that heat and the issues that I had with them.
Spend an additional money that you could be saving.
Yeah, that's... the margin on what we do is pretty great. It's a great business to be in. And if you can save on something that's one of the major expenses, like electricity, you definitely want to do that. And I noticed immediately a reduction in our electric bill because of the LED. And we're using them in flowering. And as I say, I have two rooms that are LED equipped by you all. And then there's the one room that I've been using as comparison with HPS. I want to pull them out of there and let's put the A3Is in there. And then I have to talk about what's the best thing to hang in the veg area. You know, the fact that it's a barn in Colorado, you know, essentially this is what the building is. You have to consider that the lights in the building were part of what kept it warm in the wintertime. And so in the wintertime, I almost have to, in the veg area, like keep those hot HID lights on. And we'll have to deal with that's actually doing something good there. But it would affect the lighting bill if we put the LEDs in there too. Anyway, it's a great journey to be on, and I'm real happy with where we are right now. And hey, if there's more to add the icing to the cake,
we'll do it together. Let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll definitely say cheers to the future for that. For those who have been taking notes, I know this kind of turned to a bit of an informative moment here and there. I did want to mention the four variables, or the four points that we talked about earlier, with understanding LED and dialing in from Mr. Soul's perspective. It was variables to consider. So check out the things in the room that you can change or that you can adjust. How to eliminate uncertainty. So eliminate your confusion. How can you do that? Is that resources? Is that people? Is that the Hort team? Is that calling Jer? Is that Ben, what's going on? Anyone here can assist you in making sure that you get the desired results and beyond. So you definitely want to check out how to eliminate the room for uncertainties. Thirdly, you want to revisit your ability to diagnose. So your ability to accurately assess the problem and see the solution that's needed, that's important. Obviously, that's going to come from the advice and the input that you get from your Hort experts that are helping you. And lastly, but not least, implementing the new technology, which would be Foz. And in his instance, we've seen the success. So again, Mr. Soul, wanted to say thank you.
Thank you
for stopping in. Jer, it's always a pleasure having you. You don't talk much, but when you do, it's always something good. And Ben, of course, it's always good having you, brother.
Likewise.
For those that are tuning in this season, please be sure to check in every single Thursday at 3:20 Eastern Standard Time. At 4:20 Eastern Standard Time. I'm sorry.
I was like, we need to change that.
Right, that's 3:20.
It's 4:20 somewhere. That time,
right.
You want to check out 4:20 somewhere.
It's kind of bad. My bad, guys. Yeah. Just a little. You want to check out every Thursday at 4:30 on FOS.com. That is 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, 1:20 Pacific Standard Time. So anytime it comes on, go grab a joint, grab a bong, listen to it, and enjoy some of the content that we have coming your way, because we have some guests, we have some masterclass guests. It is going to be an action-packed season, and I would hate for you to miss it. So again, Mr. Soul, thank you.
My pleasure to be here. Thank absolutely. You so much. I mean, you've done nothing but help.
Absolutely. It's more to come. Yeah. More to come.
Great discovery.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.